We're holding on them days on the Aleph, the seventh line. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. When the Pasuk says, Tzitzis, eight Tzitzis ala Onof. The word Tzitzis means branches. So in other words, loose hanging strings. As the Pasuk says, Vayikocheni b'tzitzis roshi. As Yechezkel describes how he saw in a vision of Nehua, how Hashem picked him up by his hair and brought him to Yerushalayim to see things that are going on there over there as far as certain Averis that the Jewish people were doing. So we see, in other words, that the word tzitzis describes locks of hair. Before Hashem explained, by the way, the idea is like Hashem, again, this was all a vision. He wasn't actually picked up by his hair, but it means, in other words, like Hashem was bringing him there to see bad things that are going on, and therefore Hashem, so to speak, like schlepped him by the hair. As opposed to later on, say for Yechezkel, when he describes how Hashem again took him in a vision to Yerushalayim to see the future third base of Mikdash, Shimonim Mehev Yamenu, there the Pasuk uses that expression, Vayinicheni, that Hashem gently placed me on a tall mountain and I saw the base of Mikdash, because there he's going to see very good things. Anyway, so therefore, so we see the word tzitzis means hair. And therefore, the tzitzis have to be like hair in that sense. But Omer Abaya, Abaya says, V'tzorokul forudu kitzutzisa darmoi. You have to separate these strings of tzitzis like the locks of hair of an armoy, of a goy, where they used to wear their hair in a style like that, where it was bound together on the bottom and then left loose and as loose locks on the top. So the same way the tzitzis are wound and tied together closer to the beged, as we've been learning, and then the end of it is, the ends of it are left hanging loose, from which we learn, the Rishonim point out, that this is where we get the point that the tzitzis strings shouldn't be tangled, and you need to untangle them. The iter, a big rishon, explains that this really only applies to the tchelas. So nowadays we don't have tchelas. He holds it wouldn't apply, but most rishonim don't agree with that and say you do have to separate them. So what we do is when we put on our talis in the morning, in particular married men, then you put it over omenagiz, you put it over your shoulder, you check the tzitzis to make sure they're not tangled. Meanwhile, you say the psukim, Baruch Hinafshi Es Hashem, etc., and then you make the bracha and put on the talis. The Alter Rebbe talks about in some detail what happens if you're late for shul, what happens if you're being told up for an aliyah and you need to wear a talis or whatever, so then you have more of a heter to not check them, and he goes into various details about that, of when you may or may not have to check them, when you can rely on the chazaka that they're whole from before, versus when you should have to, but ordinarily you have to check them every day. Okay, the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Hito ala Keren, if you put the tzitzis directly on the corner of the garment, right by the edge of the corner, Oy ala Gdil, or he put it on the Gdil. Now Rashi has two explanations. One is that Gdil means the reinforcing threads that you put on the edge of the garment so the weave doesn't come apart. Rashi's second explanation is that sometimes they would leave, like you have nowadays on Talisin, for example, you have threads that are left loose, and then later on they'd tie them together to make fringes or whatever, like we often have on the sides of a talis. So those kinds of things, Kshera, then the Tanakhama says it's kosher. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that poisel b'shtehem, no, both of them are poisel. It has to be further away from the corner, and it can't be in that gedil. So the Gemara points out, Kaman oz lahod omer of Gidol omer Rav, which opinion then does it follow, this that Rav Gidol says in the name of Rav, tzitzis shtricha shetene tefes ala keren, that tzitzis have to be banging against and touching the corner, in other words, that the hole for them should not be all the way by the corner, it should be a little bit further up, and then when they hang down, then they'll touch the corner. Shenema, because the Pasuk says, al kanfe vigdehem, because the tzitzis are supposed to be on the corners, so in other words, al kanfe, not big kanfe, not in the corners, but al kanfe, it should be on and touching the corner. Come on, necessarily that's like Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, because according to the Chachamim, you could conceivably have put it so close to the corner that it's just hanging down from there rather than really banging against it, and therefore following Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, you have to put it further up. You have to put it further up. There is, by the way, Shita Mekubetzes discusses over here in the postim and discuss it as well. The question is, so if you do have a fringe like that, like we have on our talasim, does that count towards what we learned yesterday? We're going to learn more in today's Gemara. That's supposed to be about three etzvos away from the corner. It has, can be anywhere between three etzvos, and we're going to talk about soon Kesher Gudol. Do those fringes count towards that distance or not? The result is that therefore what you should do is make sure those are out of the way before you put on the tzitzis. And in fact, our talesim, they do have those fringes, but they stop before the corner, and that way you don't have a problem. That way by the corner itself, you just have the fabric, the squared off fabric, and then you put the tzitzis within three etzvos of that corner. In this connection about netefes ala keren, so this is why by our talisim tanim, where minig chabad is to put two, is to have two holes, as we'll talk about, we'll talk about later on about the configuration of the holes. So if you have two holes, then what you do is, then anyway, it's netefes ala keren, it's going to be touching the corner no matter what. But if you have only one hole, then you have to do, then the post can talk about it in quite some detail, how you do it to make sure it's netefes ala keren. Our minhag is that we have one large hole for the strings, and then we have a smaller hole near the edge into which we put the shamash, and then we start winding the shamash, the longer string, around the other ones, and that hole is placed in such a way that when you wear the talus, then the tzitzis will be netefes. And the Alter Rebbe actually discusses in some detail that depending on exactly how you wear the talus, how exactly you fold the corners of the talus over your head and your shoulders, then that hole is going to have to be placed on a different side. Nowadays, it's pretty universal how people wear a talus, and therefore it's put on the long side, such that it hangs down like that and hits against the corner when you're wearing the talus. Okay. The Gemara goes on, Omer Rav Yaakov, Omer Rav Yechonon, but Tzarech Sheyarchik Moloi Kesher Gudol. You have to have the hole into which the tzitzis strings go, has to be at least a Kesher Gudol away from the edge. A Kesher Gudol is the top segment of your thumb. So in other words, count, so you take from the tip of your thumb down to the first knuckle, that's called Kesher Gudol, that length. Rav Papa had previously said, we learned on the previous Amud, that the amount is, it's supposed to be within three etzvos. So the Gemara points out, the itzirch to Rav Papa, the itzirch to Rav Yaakov. We do in fact need both statements. Rav Ben Gershom points out that both of them amount to the same thing. Both of them are three etzvos, but not everybody agrees with that, but still, there's not that much of a difference between them, so why do we need both dinim? The Eid Rav Papa, if we only had Rav Papa's din, have amin, a Terech Shalosh, when he says it should be within three tfachim, within three etzvos, just means zolay lucha tfei, it shouldn't be any further away than three etzvos from the beggar. But kamad mekarev mali, but the closer you put it to the edge, the better. So it's Terech to Rav Yaakov, therefore we need Rav Yaakov's statement that no, it should not be closer than Kesher Gudol. The Imid Rav Yaakov, and if we only had Rav Yaakov's din, have amin, and Maloi Kesher Gudol, the Likrav Tfei. On the contrary, maybe it means that it shouldn't be any closer than Kesher Gudol. And the Kamadim Gedrofik Mali, but the further away it is, the better. Tzricha, and therefore we need Rav Papa's statement that's saying that, that the maximum is three etzvos. So in other words, the two of them, one of them is saying the closest, one of them is saying the furthest. And that's the point. In other words, you have a minimum and a maximum, and that is the halacha. It has to be within a kesher gudol. It has to be more than a kesher gudol from the edge, but it has to be less than three etzvos from the edge. Again, there's not an enormous difference between them. A kesher gudol is very close to three etzvos, but nevertheless, there is that distinction. So the Gemara tells in this connection, Ravina and Rav Sama have a yasu kamed Rav Ashi. One time, Ravina and Rav Sama were sitting as talmidim in front of Rav Ashi. Chazi Rav Sama lekaunid glimad Ravina. Rav Sama noticed that the corner of Ravina's cloak, on which he had tzitzis, disosar. It was partially torn, ubotzer, and so at the hole of the tzitzis, the ubotzer, memaloi kesher gudol, and now the distance from the tzitzis to the edge of the garment is less than a kesher gudol. Don't you agree with what Rav Yaakov said in the name of Rav Yechanan that you have to do a kesher gudol away? So Rav Yechanan answers him, that's not a problem. That's talking about only when it's first made like that. Because the pasuk al kan fevigdeim l'derosam is the pasuk starts off for osu lahem tzitzis. They should make themselves tzitzis al kan fevigdeim So therefore we learn the shear, which is considered al-kanfe, and not that it's on the corner and not beneath the corner or whatever, is dafka when va'asu, when you're first making it. This is how the Levush explains it. So only when it's made, if afterwards, if it was made at the proper distance, and then the garment tore, and now it's further down, then there's not a problem with it. Nevertheless, that is why they have now in present day tzitzis, they have that reinforcement that they sew onto the corner as the piece of cloth to reinforce it. That way, making it less likely that it'll tear like that. Well, the Gemara says with two hole talisim, it's not really realistic anyway. With a two hole taliskaten, if it's going to rip, usually what it does is it rips between the holes and then the tzitzis fall out altogether. But anyway. So the Gemara says ichsif. So Rav Sama was embarrassed that he hadn't realized that point. Omale Rav Ashi, but Rav Ashi tells him lo taskif lachach, and you shouldn't feel bad about it. Chav minai hu k'tchei minam. One of them is equal to two of us. Now, one of them means of Eretz Yisrael. So Rashi explains Ravina was from Eretz Yisrael. So one person from Eretz Yisrael, because they were there, they learned Torah, and Avira Eretz Yisrael Machim, the era of Eretz Yisrael, makes you wise, therefore two of them are equal to one of us, and therefore one of them of Eretz Yisrael is equal to two of us, and therefore you shouldn't be surprised that Ravina knows something you don't. Now, the odd thing is about that Ravina was, we don't find anywhere Ravina was from Eretz Yisrael, let alone even in Eretz Yisrael. So the Sefer Dodos that is shown him, says that maybe it's a mistake, maybe instead of Ravina, it's supposed to be Rav Abba. And Rav Abba was in fact from Eretz Yisrael and moved to Bavel because of persecutions in Eretz Yisrael. On the other hand, the Reed explains that it wasn't not Eretz Yisrael versus Bavel, but Ravina was from Pumbedissa, Rav Sama was from Masa Machasya, which is where Rav Ashi's yeshiva was, and Rav Ashi tells him one person from Pumbedissa is as great as two from Masa Machasya. So Ravina being from Pumbedissa, where they had a reputation for being sharp in halacha, then therefore he knows his stuff better than you do, but don't feel bad about it. How do we put on the tzitzis? The Gemara says, Rav Acha bar Yaakov Romi Arva. Rav Acha bar Yaakov would put four strings into the tzitzis, like we do. Then he would fold them in half, so far, like we do as well. So you have eight hanging strings. Then he would put them into the hole in the garment. Fine. But the twist is that now, what he would do is he would make a slip knot. He would make a slip knot with them. So now what he would do is he would take the strings from one side and he would make with the strings on one side, he would make a loop and then put the other side through it as a slip knot. Now, Tosfos points out that he would only put seven strings in there. Then he would leave the eighth outside of that loop, outside of that slipknot, and then actually tie with it. Because otherwise, as we learned before, there's a special hector to wear kilayim and tzitzis. If they were only slipknotted together and it was easily removable, then that wouldn't be considered kilayim. So therefore, necessarily, there had to have been an actual knot someplace, not just a slipknot. So you would make a slipknot with seven of the strings like that, says Tosfos. Now, why would he do like that? A savar, he holds, but in a tmanya beglima, we do have to have eight strings on the garment. So that we have, as the pasuk says, gedilim kasalacha, where gedil implies by itself two strings, because a gedil, a braid or a twist implies two strings. Gedilim doubled, that means four strings. The mokum psil, and it has to be in the place where you're going to be winding the threads one around the other. So now, in other words, so at the point of the hole, you only have four, but by the time they hang down to the edge, and there you're going to start making the windings, and all that is going to be eight strings. So that's how he would do. So Ben Gershon has a bit of a different gersa. He requires there should be eight in the garment itself, just like there are eight where it's wound, and therefore, according to that way of looking at it, when it's doubled over, in other words, the point is there wouldn't be single threads, there wouldn't be single strings hanging down, there would be double, each one folded over, hanging on this side of the bag and on that side, and that way you have a total of eight. On the other hand, Rabbi Yirmiyahu Difti would put eight strings to begin with, the inu shitzar, and then when it's folded over, it would become 16 altogether. He held that he held. In other words, that when it says gedilin, he held that it meant because it says gedilin comes to include, you need another two strings. Rashi brings this Kabbalah mit Rabbeinu Yaakov HaZaken, Masechta Yevamos, that Rabbeinu Yaakov HaZaken, who was one of Rashi's Rebbeim, explained it this way in Masechta Yevamos, where there's a sugya over there, early on the subject of Kilayim B'Tzitzis, and of Tzitzis in general. So Rabbeinu Yaakov explained it that way, that when it says G'dilim, that means, in other words, that you have not just the original two, that you have the original four, that you have, not just that you have the original, the original four, but that you have another two G'dilim as well. So in other words, altogether, so you have eight. If we said that G'dilim by itself means four, then another G'dilim means you have altogether eight. So you have eight, because in other words, because it says gedilin taseh, Rashash explains, gedilin means four, taseh means an extra asiya, means therefore you have to have another eight. So you have to have another four, so altogether eight. Veloy ovik lahu, but he didn't make that knot. He would just take one of the strings and wind it around the other ones. And eventually he would make the knot, because as we learned before, the knot is daraisa. Ma Gredi Ravina did like we do. It's four strings, not eight, like Rabbi Yamili Difti did, but he did fold them over and then make a knot and then continue from there with the windings, and that's exactly what we do. Tosfos at the beginning of the parak points out that one way of understanding, we do Tosfos discussed over there the whole matter of Baal Tosif, what the dinim are as far as adding to the tzitzis. Tosfos had argued one possibility is that you're over, or that a person is over, only if he put two separate fringes of tzitzis on one corner. The other possibility is maybe indeed if he has extra strings in any one fringe, then that's already being over on Baal Tosif. I guess if we want to do a play on words, we could say we're infringing on Baal Tosif. But in any case, Tosfos says that maybe what it is there is a minimum and a maximum that the Torah allows. The minimum would be four threads, the maximum would be eight, and therefore and we do the minimum, which is four, whereas Rabbi Yamili Difti did the maximum possible, which is eight strings all in one all in one fringe. The Gemara says Rabbi Nachman Ashkechel Rabbi Ada Ba'ava Rami Chulti. Rabbi Nachman one time found Rabbi Ada Ba'ava was putting tzitzis strings on his beged, become a vorech lasis tzitzis, and he was making a brach on it that Hashem commanded us to make tzitzis. Amalei, so Rav Nachman says, my tzitzi shamayna. What's this tzitzi sound that I'm hearing? Like he's joking, like the tzaddik sound. You know, it's a sibilant. It's called in English. It's like a hissing sound. So like you hear it more than the other letters in the bracha. So like he's focusing on the sounds that I'm hearing the most loudest. The tzitzi sounds that I'm hearing in the bracha. What am I hearing over here? So he's saying, like in a joking way, Rashi says liglig, like he's making fun. You're not supposed to make a bracha at this point. Hochi omar Rav, this is what Rav said. Tzitzis ain't tzrich a bracha. You don't need a bracha on tzitzis. So the Gemara says, what does that mean exactly? Ki nochnu doesn't mean you don't make a bracha on tzitzis at all. So now we're going to explain what that means. Ki noch nafshid Rav Huna, when Rav Huna passed away, all Rav Chista lemirma de Rav aderav. Rav Chista came into the Beis Medrash and pointed out a contradiction between two statements of Rav. Manat Chayas points out elsewhere, the Gemara tells us a story in Bava Metzia that there was a period when Rav Huna and Rav Chista weren't, there was a fallout between them. So now only when Rav Huna passed away, then Rav Chista came in and asked this question, and we have various other ones scattered throughout Shas that he did like that. It's also possible that it means that it was like his maiden drosha, now that Rav Chista has been appointed the new Rosh Hashiva instead of Rav Huna, then now this is his maiden drosha is on this subject. Maiden shield. Anyway, Umi Omer Rav, tzitzis ain't tzricha bracha. Did Rav say that tzitzis does not require a bracha? V'ha'omer Rav Yehuda Omer Rav, minayin let tzitzis b'ovid k'chavim shi psola. How do we know that if a goy makes tzitzis, it's possible? Shenema, the pasuk says, Dabra b'nei Yisrael v'osolam tzitzis. Speak to b'nei Yisrael that they should make for themselves tzitzis, from which we learn, b'nei Yisrael yasu v'loy ovid k'chavim yasu. So Jews can make tzitzis, goyim cannot. So therefore, how could Rav say that it doesn't require a bracha? Yeah, but where's the contradiction? Okay, can't be made by a goy, but you also don't say a bracha. What does one have to do with the other? The answer is Amar Rav Yosef, because Rav Yosef explained, Kasavar Rav Chista, because Rav Chista takes the view, Kol mitzvah shekshedah b'ayud gechavim, any mitzvah that would be kosher, that it would be kosher if a goy were to do it, then be throw and sarf levarach. Now, if a Jew does it, you don't make a brach on it. Kol mitzvah psulavoy v'kachavin, but a mitzvah that's possible if a goy does it, then therefore, so now that means, in other words, it has special kedusha when a yid does it, and now there. So in other words, if it's kosher by a goy, then you can't say asher kedushanim mitzvayser, because what do you mean asher kedushanim mitzvayser? Hashem equally well said that a goy could make this thing. So therefore, the rule would be, says your chista, you wouldn't make a bracha. But when a mitzvah is possible, when it's done by a goy, then a Jew would have to make a bracha. So Rashi says, in other words, again, the point is, because since the format of the bracha is asher kedushanim mitzvayser, so therefore it doesn't make sense to say such a bracha if it's something that could equally well have been done by goyim. Tosfos explains a little differently. When we say v'tzivon nu, that means Hashem commanded us not goyim. Well, then we have to consider then. So now we understand Rav Chista's question. If a goy is possible to make tzitzis, why indeed would we not make a bracha on it? So now we're gonna digress a little bit to explain this matter about to talk about these rules of goyim making something for a mitzvah and when it's kosher and when it's not. And then eventually we're gonna get back to this question of whether in fact we say a bracha on tzitzis. But first, the Gemara, incidentally, by the way, Tosfos mentions that, now the Gemara could have easily said a very good reason why a goy can't make tzitzis is because a goy doesn't wear tzitzis. And in many mitzvahs we have a rule that only those who actually do the mitzvah can prepare, can make it. We find that, for example, by tefillin, for example, that only those who wear tefillin can write tefillin. In other words, for example, a goy can't write tefillin. A person who doesn't believe in the mitzvah of tefillin can't write them. And you have some other examples. Now, women don't wear tzitzis, so the fact that the Gemara doesn't say over here that's the reason why goyim can shows that that's not necessarily a rule. Here we're going to talk soon. The Gemara is going to talk about soon that women can't write tefillin, for example, because they don't wear tefillin. But tzitzis is not necessarily the same thing. So Tosfos actually says that would mean a woman would in fact be kosher to tie tzitzis. However, there are many different opinions of Rishonim about that, and then some of them bring a proof from a story in Masechta Tainis that talks about a chest that Rav Chanina ben Dosa's wife is going to have in the future, that she's going to use it for tchelas for the tzaddikim lo'asid lavoi. So that would also imply that women can make tchelas and tie tzitzis. So they were showing him talk back and forth about that, about various possibilities. And the final halacha is we say that preferably women should not tie tzitzis because of the question over here whether in fact women can validly put tzitzis. So the Gemara goes on. Uklolahu, is this a general rule? Is it in fact true that any mitzvah that could be done by a goy, you don't make a bracha, and vice versa? V'arim mila the cheder ba'ovid gechavim. What about mila, which is kosher, at least according to some opinions, by a goy doing it? The Tanya, as we learn in the Braise, Ir She'en Bar Roifa Yisrael, a city where there's no Jewish doctor, or Jewish moyel, V'yesh Bar Roifa Armoy, but there is a Goyish doctor, V'roifa Kosi, or a Kosi doctor, Yomol Armoy. So then the question is, which one should you go to for Bris Milah? Yomol Armoy, V'ar Yomol Kosi. Better let the Goy do it rather than the Kosi, because the Kosi, when he does it, is going to be doing it L'Shem Avodah Zarah. The goyim, since Rashi explains in Avodah Zarah in the relevant sugya, that the goyim don't generally circumcise their children anyway. So if they're going to do it, they're not going to do it l'shem Avodah Zarah. They'll do it fine. They'll do it as a medical procedure or whatever, but they won't be doing it l'shem Avodah Zarah. But the kusim do mila. But they have in mind their Avodah Zarah, and therefore that would be worse, says, divrei Meir. That's what a Meir says. Rabbi Yehuda says the other way around. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kusi, V'loy Amoy, better let the Kusi do it rather than the Goy, because the Goy, as the Gemara has a whole sugya there in Avodah Zarah, is suspect on Shvichus Domin. It's suspect that he may kill the child, or adult for that matter, whatever, the person who's having the Bris Milah in the course of it. Now, the halacha is not like that, by the way. The halacha is that a Goy is not, in fact, kosher to do a bris milah. Well, the halacha, to be exact, is like Rabbi Yehuda, a kussi could do it back in the day when the kussim were considered quasi-Jews, then they could do it. Nowadays, the kussim are considered full-fledged goyim, and therefore they can't. You can only have, a bris can only be done by a Jew. In any case, according to the mayor, a goy could do a bris milah, and it would be valid, and ubi yisrael, tzarech levarach. Nevertheless, if a Jew does a bracha, if a Jew does a milah, then he makes a bracha. Dama Meir, as we learn in Shabbos, Hamol Oimer Baruch Hashem Kedushan Mitzvah Zivason Ala Milah. So you see that even though it's a mitzvah that appointed a mayor could have been done by a goy, nevertheless he make a bracha. So Rav Yosef's rule doesn't hold true. So the Gemara says, well, midi hu taima elo l'rav. Yeah, but the only reason we brought in this rule is to point out to explain what Rav is saying, because Rav Chisda had pointed out there seems to be a contradiction in what Rav is saying. Well, you should know, Rav mifs a posel. As a matter of fact, Rav holds that a milah is posel by a goy, so therefore, according to him, the rule does hold truth. To Itmar, as in fact, we have a discussion in that sugya in Avodah Zarah. Minayim a milah bo'ev kechavim shepsula. How do we know that a milah done by a goy is posel? Doru bar Papa Mishmeda Rav Omar. So Doru bar Papa says in the name of Rav, when we make a siyum, we have the 10 sons of Papa, Hamina bar Papa, Rami bar Papa, etc. One of them is Doru bar Papa. So he says in the name of Rav, because the pasuk is Atas Brisi Sishmer, you should keep my covenant, and therefore that means you, Jews, and not going. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Rabbi Yochanan says a different source for it, because the pasuk says Himo Yimo, circumcised, he should circumcise, and from that we learn hamol yomol. It means only one who is circumcised himself can do a bris milah. The Gemara discusses over there a naftamina, and what part of the naftamina would be whether women can do a bris milah, because the Gemara discusses over there a woman is considered that she's already circumcised, even if she doesn't have the relevant part, but she's considered from birth as though already circumcised. Therefore, according to that way of looking at it, she could do a bris milah. Whereas according to the other way of looking at it, then she couldn't. Lamaisa, the post can say, in general, a woman should not do a bris milah, but in extreme circumstances, they're allowed to. You have stories from the time of the Chashmonoim, you have in much more recent times and type of stories from the Holocaust of women who did maul their children. So the point is, in other words, that yes, according to Rav, indeed, according to Rav, yes, the rule does hold true. Any a mitzvah which a goy is possible to do, namely bris milah, you do make a bracha on it. So the Gemara says, fine, let's continue discussing this rule of Rabbi Yosef. Sukkah Messiah tefillin habitiyote. On the one hand, we can prove Rabbi Yosef's point by considering the mitzvah of sukkah, of making a sukkah. On the other hand, we find a din with tefillin which contradicts Rabbi Yosef's rule. Namely, Harei sukkah dekshera bo'ev v'chavim, a sukkah made by a goy is kosher. The Tanya, we learn in a braisa. Sukkahs ov v'chavim, a sukkah made by goyim, they made it in order to live there in the summertime. They made it just for shade in the summertime, but they didn't make it the shem mitzvah, of course. Sukkas noshim, or sukkah made by women who are after all not chayiv in sukkah. Sukkas behema, or a sukkah that was made for animals to shelter underneath it. Sukkas kusim, or sukkah made by kusim, where also they're they're not full-fledged geirim, and therefore you would think their sukkah is possible. Like we said before, sometimes they have in mind l'shem avodah zarah. Now, sukkah mikol makom, or sukkah of any kind, which the Gemara explains in sukkah, we're talking, for example, a sukkah made by shepherds, or people who are watching fruit dry, or whatever, different things like that. Ksheira, any such sukkah is kosher, over vachit, heim sukkachas kilchasa, as long as it has proper sukkah. Which means, in other words, that it has to be that it was made with enough schach to begin with, that it's obvious that it was made for shade, and therefore, so in other words, it wasn't just, for example, somebody put bundles of it's not just that somebody put bundles of sticks up there or whatever in order to dry them out, then it wasn't placed for shade. But now, when it's covered enough that you can see that it is shady inside, and so also merubah mechamasa, it has more shade than sun, then we know that it was made for the purpose of shade, and then we don't care about whether it was lishma or not. And we see that when a Jew makes a sukkah, he taka doesn't make a bracha when he makes the sukkah. The Tanya, we learn in a braisa, ho is a sukkah la'atzmo, person makes a sukkah for himself. Omer, he says the bracha shech yonu at the time, baruch atah Hashem alakim al-chaylam, shech yonu v'ki yonu v'ki yonu was manazeh. Now, we don't actually do that. We instead make shech yonu by kiddush on the nights of sukkahs. But this is actually why there's different minhagim about which bracha to say first. On the first night, we say shech yonu first, and then sukkah. On the first night we say the bracha loisha basukah, and then we say the shech yonu, and the reason for that is that way the shech yonu also includes everything that came before it, the fact that it's the yomtiv, but also the fact that we made the sukkah and now we're sitting in it. So we do shech yonu last on the first night. So we say shech yonu bol leishiva when he comes to sit in the sukkah. Oimer, then he says the bracha baruch atah Hashem lekein malchay l'mashal kedushanu v'tzivanu leishiva sukkah ve'ilu lasis sukkah loy mevarach. Now you see, there's no bracha to make the sukkah. So this braisa then supports Rabbi Yosef's rule. So far, a sukkah is kosher if made by a goy. And therefore, it's Yid doesn't make a bracha when he makes it. He makes a bracha when he sits in it, which is when he's fulfilling the mitzvah. However, tefillin tiyuvdei. However, when it comes to tefillin, then we have a contradiction to Rav Yosef's rule, and in turn to what Rav Chista had implied that Rav Yosef had said, teached out what Rav Chista held, that the rule is if mitzvah is kosher, if done by a goy, then you don't make a bracha on it, and if it's kosher, if it's not kosher made by a goy, then you do make a bracha on it. Well, we have a braisa about tefillin that contradicts that. But it's tefillin the psalos boiv kachavim, tefillin written by a goy or apostle. And we know that the Tony Rav Chinin Abreidi Rava, as Rav Chinin Abreidi Rava Mipashrunya, as Rav Chinin Abreidi Rava Mipashrunya, they taught the following braisa. Sefer Torah Tefillin Mezuzah Shekosven Tzeduki. If Sefer Torah Tefillin Mezuzah were written by Tzeduki, now a Tzeduki is a full-fledged Yid, but he doesn't believe in Tefillin and Mezuzah because the details of those are part of Torah Shabbat Pan. The Tzeduki don't believe in it. Or Kusi, or it was written by a Kusi, or Kachovim, or a full-fledged Goy. Rashi points out the order is significant. The Tzeduki is most likely familiar with how to write Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzahs. So he's listed first, and then after him you have the other ones. Shitra Mokobetzis has a different gusa and a different explanation in Rashi about the order of it. In any case, Eved, or if they were written by an Eved who's not Chayev and Tefillin, Ish of a cotton, or if they were written by a woman or a cotton, mummer, or by a yid who shmadzich, Rahman Latzlan. So all those psulin, any such tefillin are possible. Shanema, because the pasuk says, "Shautam uchsavtam." The pasuk says you should tie tefillin on and you should write mezuzahs. And the writing also applies to tefillin, from which we learn kol sheyeshne b'kshira, yeshne b'ksiva. Anybody to whom the din of tying tefillin on, anybody who's subject to the din of tying on, is able to write tefillin. Kol sheyeshne b'kshira. But if he's not subject to the mitzvah of tying tefillin, eine b'ksiva, then he's not able to write tefillin. So now, in other words, so tzeduki is in fact bound by the mitzvah of tefillin, but he doesn't. He doesn't believe in it. The various other ones that we talked about over here are not actually chayev in tefillin in the first place. There is, in fact, the word tzeduki over here. Maybe a sensor is changed, and in fact the real word would be min, and then that's more clear. A min is also a Jew who's shmadzach, and then in particular min often refers to like the early Christians and whatever. So they're familiar with how to write tefillin, but they don't believe in them, and therefore they're possible. To write tefillin. There is, by the way, quite a bit of discussion about the fact that anyway the Gemara mentions elsewhere that a goy doesn't write lishma. So the long Tosfos on Amud Aleph, in fact, that the bride, one point is that you're right. The bride says not really needed to tell us that it's possible if a goy wrote them, because anyway he doesn't write lishma. It's really more the chiddush about the Eved and Isha and the other ones. Then the Gemara, the bride just puts them all together. Anyway, the point is, Ovi Yisrael ain't it tzarech lebarech. Now, when a Jew makes tefillin, he doesn't make a bracha. And we know that the Sholach Rav Chiya Breider Rav Huna Meshmeid Rav Yechanan, because Rav Chiya Breider Rav Huna sent a message to the Chachamim in the name of Rav Yechanan, Al tefillin sho yad oimer baruch asher kedushanim etzvezifan lo aniach tefillin. We learned this a few days ago.
Now, for the tefillin shel yad, you make a bracha. You make a bracha la'aniach tefillin. Al tefillin shel rosh, you make a bracha hashem for the shana mitzvah zana al mitzvah tefillin. And for the shel rosh, you make a bracha al mitzvah tefillin. We talked about in detail a few days ago about. Is it that you, when would you say that second bracha? We talked about that according to, we talked about it, there's different opinions among the poskim. Do you say the bracha al mitzvah tefillin on the shorosh always, or do you say it only if you talk between the shoyad and the shorosh? So in the end, you have different minhagim in the Jewish world. As a result of that, minhag Chabad is that we put them on. We say only the one bracha, la'aniach tefillin, for both of them, and we say, al mitzvah tefillin for the shorosh only if we talked in between. Whereas the minhag of much of the Jewish world is, the general Ashkenazic minhag, is that you make the bracha al mitzvah tefillin regardless. Anyway, the point is you have those two brachas. But we see that there's no bracha to make tefillin. So now this contradicts Rabbi Yosef's rule, because a goy cannot make tefillin, and nevertheless we don't make a bracha, a Jew does not make a bracha to make tefillin. Now, Tosfos points out, evidently they must have asked, the Gemara knows, they must have asked the Chiyah B'rei de Rav Huna, all of the details of brachas in this connection, and he's replying to them, and therefore if he left out this bracha, then it means he holds this bracha doesn't exist. Tosfos points out that the Yerushalmi does in fact say that you would make brachas for making mitzvahs. The Yerushalmi does in fact hold you would say a bracha for making tzitzis, for making a sukkah, for making tefillin. However, all Gemara disagrees with that. You don't actually make a bracha for making these things only when you actually use them for the mitzvah. So in any case, the point is, therefore, so that contradicts, but at least according to all Gemara, that you don't make a bracha to make tefillin, then that contradicts Rabbi Yosef's rule. Even though it's possible for a goy to make them, nevertheless a Jew does not make a bracha. So we're back to then on Amud Aleph. We said Rav Chista had pointed out a contradiction in Rav's statements, where Rav says that a goy cannot make tzitzis, but we also said that you don't make a bracha. So now, what's Rav Chista's question? It's no different than it is with tefillin, where a goy can't make tefillin and you don't make a bracha on making them either. So no, the Gemara says erel lav hainu taima. No, that's not the reason why you don't make a bracha. It has nothing to do with whether a goy is kosher to make it or not. The rule is like this: kol mitzvah da'asi yosem, gemar mitzvah. Whenever you have a mitzvah where the doing of the mitzvah itself is the fulfillment of the mitzvah, you ben mila. You do a milah, that's it. You do the actual action of milah, and that itself is a mitzvah. So even if, as we said on Amud Aleph, there are opinions that it is kosher, if it's done by a goy, nevertheless, be still at Tzarech Lebarach. Nevertheless, a Jew has to make a bracha on it. But when the mitzvah is not, when doing the mitzvah, when making it is not the completion of the mitzvah, it's only, it's a preparation, it's a prerequisite for doing the mitzvah, but the mitzvah itself is going to be accomplished later. You're going to tefillin, for example, making tefillin. Or tzitzis, or any of these others. You have to write tefillin. Obviously, somebody has to go and write and make and sew and do everything for the tefillin, but that's not the actual mitzvah is not being fulfilled at that point. The actual mitzvah is when somebody puts them on their arm and on their pen. So then, even though it is true that it's possible if a goy makes them, nevertheless, be stroll and it's tzarech levarach. So when it comes to a Jew making tefillin, he doesn't make a bracha. It's only the person who puts on the tefillin makes the bracha. So that's going to be the rule. Okay, over tzitzis b'hakamitzvah. Now, when we said on Amud Aleph that Rav Nachman and Rav Chista were arguing whether you say a bracha when you're making tzitzis or not, he started the story that Rav Nachman found Rav Adar Bar Ava putting tzitzis, and he said, and he was making a bracha lasa tzitzis, and Rav Nachman made fun of him and said, "What am I hearing this tzitzi? You should know, Rav said tzitzis ain't a tzircha bracha. So what is it? So do tzitzis require a bracha or not when you make them?" So b'hakamitzvah. Here was the machlokas. Mar Savar. Rav Chista, who holds you don't say a bracha, holds choivas talis, who, as we talked about in yesterday's daf, on the malach and aleph, there's two different ways of looking at it. Is tzitzis a requirement on the garment, which we said that would mean, even if you have a garment that you're not wearing, and it's just in a drawer or a box, nevertheless, if it has four corners, it's higher than tzitzis, well then, it comes out, then as soon as you put the tzitzis on that beged, then you're fulfilling the mitzvah. Because now, even though that beged is going to remain in the drawer, it still needs tzitzis. So then according to that way of looking at it, then you would make a bracha as soon as you put the tzitzis on. Whereas Rav Nachman holds that tzitzis is an obligation on the person. When a person is going to be wearing a four-cornered garment, then he needs to have tzitzis on it. And here, so therefore, so when he puts the tzitzis on it, the full fulfillment of the mitzvah hasn't happened yet. Only when he actually puts it on, and therefore, there's no bracha when you make the tzitzis. Only when you first put it on. The Rashba points out the Chiddushim Am Yechosim La Rashba talks about this and says maybe who says Rav Chista actually argues with this. And he said because he gave a different reason because it's possible by a guy. So they talk about that the Gemara doesn't mean the focus between Rav Nachman and Rav Chista means between Rav Nachman and Rav Abba. Rav Abba had made the bracha. Rav Nachman said you shouldn't be making the bracha. So that would sort of machlokas would be between the two of them. So the Gemara says, "Omalei Rav Mordechai le Rav Ashi," but Rav Mordechai tells Rav Ashi, "Atun Hochi Masnisula." You should know that you in your yeshiva in Masa Machasya have learned this statement of Rabbi Yehuda in that way, and you learned that Rabbi Yehuda had said that if a goy makes tzitzis it's possible, and therefore you were, and then therefore that drove the whole sugya that we just had. Anan, but Rav Mordechai tells Rav Ashi, "Hochi Masnisula." This is how we learn it in our yeshiva. Omalei Rav Yehuda Amram, we know this is going to come shekshera. On the contrary, you're going to back Rabbi Yehuda. Says in the name of Rav, how do we know that tzitzis that are made by a goy are kosher? She never will also lahem tzitzis, as the pasuk says, they should make for them tzitzis. Means yasu lahem achera, means others, goyim, can make tzitzis for them. So according to that, then it would still fit nicely with Rabbi Yosef's rule before that because it's kosher according to this opinion, it's made by a goy, therefore yid doesn't make a bracha on it. The halacha nevertheless is that if a goy makes tzitzis, it's possible, as we were learning up until now. We often find, by the way, in Shas, this kind of thing, that a Mordechai points out to Rav Ashi how we learned in our yeshiva versus how you learn in yours, because Rav Ashi was putting together the Gemara as we have it, so he gathered together all the Chachamim from all over in order that they could compare the different versions of the discussions on the Gemara that they have, so therefore we often find Rav Mordechai pointing out to Rav Ashi that you should know there's a different version of this discussion that we had in our yeshiva, so that it can be discussed and incorporated into the Gemara. The Gemara says, the Gemara continues, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, Asan minach koitzim, if a person makes tzitzis strings out of the thorns, koitzim means thorns, Rashi explains that it means, in other words, that you have, so Rashi has two explanations. Or really one explanation. It means, in other words, pieces that stick out of the garment. We were talking before about, for example, the fringes that they may leave, the decorative fringes hanging off the side of the garment. So it actually says either the word koitzim means hamiktsotzim, that they're chopped off afterwards, or they're called koitzim because they stick out like thorns. So if a person uses those fringes to make to and makes them into strings for tzitzis, or min hanimin, or from threads that are left out, that are left over at the end after the weaving of the garment. So Rashi actually elsewhere explains a little differently. Koitzim would be where they ripped during the weaving, and then you tie them, and then you put them on the, and then you put them on the end, and then you put them on the ends of the cloth afterwards as for decoration. So that would be that. Nimin would be where they're still attached to the fabric, but they weren't woven together with it. Or maybe not gouging, or from threads that were left, or from mina nimin rather would mean threads that are left over that they didn't weave with the beged in the first place, that they meant them for the beged but they didn't actually use it. Or maybe not gouging, or from ones that are left on the edge of the garment after it was woven. In all those cases, psula. In all those cases, it would be possible because he didn't put the strings on for the mitzvah of tzitzis. So in each of these cases, koitzin, nimin, gaudin, then they weren't left there. They're hanging off the end, but they're not. They're hanging off the end, but they're it's cast of alamina also. You're making them from something which is already there, and therefore that's not good. There are several other opinions among Rishonim of what these things mean. Another explanation is mina koitzim is that you have that the goinim, the balamur, and the wings from the goinim, that it means that you have strings that were, you have wool from the animal as it was walking between the thorns. Some wool got ripped off and ended up getting tangled in the thorns. Mina nimin would mean from, it's made from mina nimin, according to that, would mean from, that it's made from wool, which is very, very coarse. Like goat hair, I mean, a gowdin would be that after a tailor makes the garment, he cuts off the ends, and then those would be the gowdin. So all of those would be possible. I mean, a sisin trailer, but if you make them from a spool of yarn, kosher, because Rabbi Yehuda is saying, in other words, you do need, they have to be put on the beged at Fort Lashem Sittis, and they can't be from things that were ripped off wool or whatever, because not the covered dick. But if they come from a regular spool of thread, then it would be kosher, because we don't care whether they were spun Lashem, we don't care whether they were spun Lashem Mitzvah or not. He amrita kamei de Shmuel. However, Rabbi Yehuda says, when I told this over to Shmuel, Rav passed away 7 years before Shmuel. Afterwards, Rabbi Yehuda became Shmuel's Talmud, and we find him with him throughout Shas. So Rabbi Yehuda says, when I told over the statement of Rav to Shmuel, Omar, he said, no, afmin asisim psula. It would be possible even if you take it from a spool of thread, but in tviya l'shma, because the threads have to be spun for the sake of the mitzvah. So again, according to Rashi, the vote is, in other words, we're focusing on the matter of whether it's Lashma or not. According to Rav, it's possible if it came from Koitzim or whatever, because those threads were not even put on the beged of Lashma, whereas it's kosher if it's kosher from a spool of thread, because at least they're put on the beged of Lashma, and Shmuel is arguing, saying, no, they have to be spun Lashma. So again, there are Rishonim, and the Goinim bring this, and the Rambam brings this. That mina koitzim means wool that was shed by the animal that was caught on thorns. And the reason is because of gizri mitzvah. It's not respectful for the mitzvah to use such wool. So therefore, so we'd be saying mina sisin, it was from a regular spool of wool that was meant as actual weaving or sewing thread, then that would be fine. But Shmuel is saying no, because it has to be spun lashma. So the Gemara points out to Tanoi. There's actually a machlokas Tanoi about this. And a Braisa says about tefillin, Sipon Zahav, if he plated the tefillin with gold, so Rashi explains, it doesn't mean, in other words, that you have the batim and then above that he put gold, means he made the batim themselves out of gold. So now it can't be, as we learned in the previous pedic, it has to be leather specifically. And there are Netziv learns that it does in fact mean that it means that the bias itself was plated with gold. Whatever the case, no, it has to be made out of leather. So Oshit Tol Alein O Behematmeir, or if he covered them with the skin of a non-kosher animal, Psulis, then the tefillin are going to be possible because when it's not leather, then it has to be leather, and when it's from a non-kosher animal, then we have a rule, Laman Tia Teres Hashem Beficha, the Torah of Hashem should be in your mouth, it says in connection with tefillin, and that means anything that's made for tefillin has to be something that's kosher. Or behemah tehora, if he made them from the skin of a kosher animal, cheres, then they're kosher, but afbishla ibdam l'shman, even if he didn't tan the leather for the sake of the mitzvah tefillin. Rav Shimon Gamliel Oimer, Rav Shimon Gamliel disagrees and says, no, af or behemah tehora, even if it's made from the skin of a kosher animal, psulas, then it would be possible, ad sheyabdin l'shman, unless he tans them l'shman. So the same kind of argument that you have as far as tefillin, then you're going to have the same thing as sittis. Rav is going to hold like the Tanakhama that you don't have to tan the leather lashma and you don't have to spin the threads of sittis lashma. Shmuel will hold that you need both. You need to tan the leather lashma, and you also need to spin the strings of sittis lashma. There's a machlokas about that, whether is the same machlokas going to apply to the parchment of the tefillin themselves. There's quite a bit of discussion about that. Tosfos also points out the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel. Even though usually we have the halacha is like Rav against Shmuel when it comes to matters of Issa v'Heter, here the halacha is going to be like Shmuel because we find other Gemaras which follow Shmuel's opinion in this. So the halacha is, in fact, the final halacha is the parchment of the tefillin and the bottom of the tefillin and everything all have to be tan l'shma, and if not, then the tefillin are possible. Now let's start talking about how Tchelis is actually dyed. Omale Abaya Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yehuda. Hot tchelta heichit tzavit ula. How do you dye tchelas? Omale, Rav Shmuel says like this. My sin in dam chilozen, we start by taking the blood of the chilozen. Later on, on Daf Mamdala, the Gemara is going to talk more about the identity of what the chilozen is. There is, eventually, in the time, we're going to see, in the times of the Amiroyim, they were still clear on it. Later on, in the times of the Goinim already, it was forgotten. The Medrash Tanchuma says on it that the chilozen has been hidden away. About 140 years ago, they started trying to rediscover it. First, there was the Radziner Rebbe researched the matter and came up with the explanation that it's the cuttlefish, the common cuttlefish, which is the source of tchelos, and his chassidim started wearing it. He sent it around to different rabbonim of that time. Many of them disagreed with him, one of them being the Rebbe Rashab was consulted, and he wrote a whole letter, you can find an Igros Kodesh, explaining why it's not, various reasons why not to do it, including the idea that Alpi Kabbalah, we don't have tchelos until Mashiach comes, but also Nigla, different reasons as well. In any case, within the next few decades after that, different other people got involved. Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac HaLevi Herzog, who later was the chief rabbi of Israel, did some research on it. He concluded that, no, it's not the cuttlefish. He concluded it's a kind of snail, a kind of mollusk, a kind of snail-like creature that lives in the ocean called Jamfina. And he was able to produce a dye from it. And then in later times, they kept on researching it. Nowadays they think it's another one called Hexaplex trunculus. And you have various people around the world who wear tchelos made from one or another of these kinds of creatures. And then you have the majority of Jews still don't, and just wear white strings. In any case, sort of Shmuel Bar Yehuda says like this: we start with the blood of the chilazin, the sammonim, and we also use different other ingredients. Tosfos wonders, wait a minute, how are you allowed to mix anything with the tchelos? So Rashi just says that what it means is, in other words, there are certain chemicals that you need that are necessary in order for the dye to stick well to the wool. But Rambam also, when he brings these halachas, he mentions that, for example, you use alum, which is a mineral that contains aluminum and sodium and whatever else, and that causes the dye to stick well to the wool. Tosfos says maybe the vote is tchelos is not just the blood of the chilazin by itself. The definition of tchelos would be that blood plus these other ingredients, and therefore it would be fine. Anyway, so sort of Shmuel Bar Yehuda says, so we take the blood, we take these other ingredients that are necessary for the purpose. We put them all into the vat, and we boil it up until we have the tchelos dye. Then we take a tiny little bit of it in an eggshell or some other kind of keli. We test it with a tuft of wool to see whether the dye has been produced well and whether it's absorbed well by the wool. Then we throw out the dye that was in that eggshell, and we burn that sample of wool. Why do we need to do that? So that's the Gemara is going to explain. Shmamina plus the fact that the way that Shmuel Bar Yehuda describes it, then we can learn three things from it. The first thing we can learn is that tasting literally means tasting. So it means that dying out of a test. So dying as a test is possible. It has to be done lashma. So any dye that was used for a test is going to be possible. So in other words, therefore, if we tested the tuft of wool by putting it into the vat itself, we would end up passing all the dye in the vat, because all of it would be considered to have been used for the test. Therefore, that's why we need to put it in a separate container. Second of all, we learn that dyeing has to be done l'shma, and therefore, so that's why we have to throw out the piece of wool afterwards. And we learn from that that the testing would pass all the dye, and therefore if we were to put it back, then all of it would become possible, and therefore we have to throw it out. Therefore we have to throw out that little sample of dye. So last on the first and third thing is exactly the same. The first and second. When we're saying that testing it is possible, that amounts the same, that you have to dye at l'shma. So why? So those are essentially the same thing. And the Gemara explains, "Omravashi matam farmer." What it means is, it's true. There really are essentially two dinim over here, but there really are. It really is one din. Those two things, or matam farmer. It's what it's doing is giving it as a reason. Matam to imapsula. Why is it that testing it is possible? Meshum debenim sviyah lishma, because the dying has to be done lishma. And here you didn't do it in order for the mitzvah of tzitzis. You did it in order to test. Whereas we learned the other day in the Gemara, that's why we talked about a possible concern. We talked about a possible concern that people might sell their samples as tchelos. So now, Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda is saying, to avoid that, what we do is once we're finished doing the test, then we burn the piece of wool that was used for the test, and that way nobody is going to end up selling it as tchelos for tzitzis. Tosfos points out that after all, you know, even if you did have in mind l'shem tzitzis, but you're doing it not only l'shem tzitzis, but also l'shem the test. So it's similar to, like, it would be like a mincha, going back to the Masechta Menachos, which we're long off the topic of it, but at the beginning of the Masechta, we talked about that after all, if you do the kmitzah of a mincha, l'shma, v'shaloi l'shma, then by most menachos, we said it's kosher, and this doesn't count for the owner, and by minchas chorita and minchas knois, it's outright possible. So therefore, the same way over here, we don't want to die in which is done l'shma and shaloi l'shma. So now, therefore, in other words, so it's not really three different dinim, we're really learning two dinim, but one of them is a two-part din. In other words, we derive one part from the other. Okay. The Gemara points out to Tanoi. There's actually a machlokas Tanoi about this. If he tests it, then it's possible, or a Gilsa on the side says Tama Psala, that if he tests it, then it becomes possible. Mishum Shanema, Kleel Techelas, because the Pasuk says, in connection with the Ne'il, which also has to be dyed Techelas, it says it should be completely Techelas. So Kleel Techelas means it should be dyed with the entire Techelas, so all of the blood of the Chilazin should be in it. There shouldn't be anything else that was frozen, that was dyed with it previously. So Tosfos says it's not so much that the point would come out essentially that the color of the dye changes after you dye in it one time, and then it's not so clearless. Tosfos says that's not what it means. It means basically that, in other words, you need the entire thing, and not that it was first used, that after you use it to dye in one time, then it's less important. And therefore, if you do it, shaloi l'shma. So in other words, it comes out of point of Rashi that even l'shma, you couldn't do two different batches from the same vat, because once you did the first one, then it would sort of ruin the color a little bit for the second one. Tosfos was saying that's not so. You can dye from the same vat as many batches as you want, as long as they're all l'shma. Anyway, give it Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, that's how Rav Chanina ben Gamliel learns. So according to him, in fact, testing it would be possible. Rav Yechanan ben Da'avai, remember, Rav Yechanan ben Da'avai says, I feel a marasheni, Shibach Harker. No, even the second color in it, even after you used it previously for dyeing, the leftover would be kosher. And we don't care, that's a slightly different shade. Mishum Shanema or Shni Telas, because the Pasuk says that one of the dyes they use for the Mishkan is Shni Telas, which means it means crimson. The second one, so even the second color of the red dye would be called telas, and the same thing as chelas, which is in the same pasuk. Then we would learn, says Rav Yechanan ben Da'avai, that the second color is also kosher, and therefore it would be fine even if you tested it before. And now the color is a little bit different, or now it's less important because you used it shaloi l'shma. So in short, when Rav Yehuda is saying that we have to throw out the piece of wool and we have to throw out the little bit of dye that we used for testing, in that he's following Rav Chanina ben Gamliel's opinion, and the Rambam indeed passes that as halacha. And says that's how you do it. You have to test it. So you do that. You take a little bit in a small cup. You test it. You throw out the piece of wool. You burn the piece of wool. You throw out the little bit of tefillah you use, and now the rest of the tefillah in the vat is kosher for tzitzis. So we're going to go on tomorrow, Bez Hashem, and we're going to continue talking about this matter of tefillah and exactly how to test whether this is genuine tefillah or not. And we're going to continue talking about these relevant dinim.
Regarding the